Hi. All right. So I'm Joey. I'm an addict.
This is really scary.
So my sobriety date is November 7th of 2016. No one's more surprised at that than me. All right. So let's see. So I was born in Florida. I lived there most of my life until about 6 years ago, 5 years ago. In Tampa, born and raised there. My parents were together when I was born. They divorced probably, I think, when I was 6 years old, but too young to understand what it really was. I have an older sister. She's 8 years older than I am. She was my hero growing up, and, you know, she meant the world to me. So my home life when I was, you know, when my parents were together, I don't really remember any kind of happy memories. They were always arguing, you know, so I look back now and I'm like, okay, so divorce was inevitable. But the way divorce was explained to me was, we're moving out and Dad's not coming with us. I still didn't really understand what that was. I was very influenced by my sister, and she was just an angry teenager when that happened. When my parents divorced, I also found out, because my dad also found another girlfriend while he was still married to my mom, he's still with that lady today, who's my stepmom, who I absolutely love. So, you know, there was a time there where, like, my dad would come and pick me up on the weekends, and my sister wouldn't go, and so after a while, my sister was, you know, talking in my ear about my dad, and so I was like, well, if Erica's not going to go, I'm not going to go either. You know, so I didn't talk to my dad for about a year and a half, 2 years, only because my sister told me not to. I didn't understand the whole situation. I didn't understand what was going on. I was still in that period of time where I loved everybody. So, you know, I loved my stepmom. But my sister had a lot of animosity. So I was like, well, if she's been upset, or if she doesn't like her, I'm not going to like her either. you know, my parents tried to do as much as they could. They did everything for me that I could. Growing up, in my eyes, I felt like I had a great childhood. Never went without, always had what I needed. I did go to private school most of my life. But there was a lot of things behind the scenes that I didn't know where, you know, like my mom liked to spend money, a lot of it. Especially when she didn't have it. You know, but I lived with my mom most of the time or the whole time. Would just go visit my dad on the weekends or holidays or whatever. We ended up moving, so we lived in Tampa, and then so when my parents divorced, we moved into like a condo in Tampa with my mom and sister, and I don't know the whole situation. I can only assume now because my mom had a spending problem. We ended up moving out probably about 45 minutes away from Tampa to live with my grandparents, and so we lived with my grandparents, and for about 4 years, my mom ended up remarrying. But in the process of those 4 years, I had gotten involved with horseback riding and found out that I really, really enjoyed horseback riding. I ended up getting a horse and started showing, and that became my passion, was my horse. My horse was everything to me. I also did other activities. My mom kept me super busy, so I didn't have to worry about, you know, life and all of that. I was always going, doing something. If I wasn't with my horse, I was playing soccer, I was going to Cub Scouts. I was always on the move doing something. My mom tried to make it to where I had, you know, a really good life. let's see. And then, we'll skip forward to middle school. So middle school, you know, even though we moved out with my grandparents, after my mom remarried, we moved around a lot. We never stayed in a place for longer than a year, which I know now that's how long leases are, so the lease would end. We would move again. I didn't really understand all of that back then. I was just, you know, I was very, my mom did a really good job at hiding all of our troubles. But the same thing with my stepdad, there was a lot of arguing going on. You know, so my home life was just, you know, and marriage to me just looked like a whole lot of arguing and a whole lot of, like, headaches. So probably around my eighth grade year, I started going through, like, thinking, you know, something is different about me. I didn't know what, but, you know, later on I figured out, you know, I was gay. I never really did anything with that. I was teased a lot because I acted differently. You know, and my excuse was, well, I live with two women, you know. I don't know, some bullshit thing. So, I don't know, it was just weird. You know, I always had friends, but I always definitely always got along better with the girls. And, yeah, it was just the way it was. I always got along better with the girls. Had some guy friends, but, you know, the girls were nicer. that was kind of it. I don't know. I say a lot. I'm really sorry. I didn't really start acting, acting out on the whole gay thing until I was probably, I would say sophomore year of high school. You know, I started meeting guys on, you know, AOL chat rooms, guys my age that went to other high schools in the area. And my sophomore year of high school, I was driving. So, you know, I would tell my mom one thing and I would just go out and I would meet these guys and we would hang out. And I started kind of learning what, you know, being gay was. So I kind of was getting a whole nother group of friends outside of school at that point. And so my junior year is when I really started dating somebody. You know, being in a house where my mom was a control freak and my sister was just nosy and wanted to know everything. My sister went through my room and found an email or something. I don't know. Something that was printed out that she found a letter from a guy or whatever. So she came to me and she's like, I know you're gay. I went through your room and I found out. I was like, okay. So telling my sister was no big deal. I didn't care about that. A week later, my mom found out because she was going through my room being the nosy mom that she was. And she found a magazine. And I was like, okay. So that was just like a, oh my God. Well then, you know, of course I was like, well, let me just tell you everything that's going on with me right now. I'm dating somebody that's going to college, and I was a junior in high school, and the guy I was dating was a sophomore in college. So my mom kind of freaked out about that. I don't want to say she was like anti-gay, but I was her son and she was going to love me no matter what. She just didn't know how to handle it because she didn't know what to do. You know, so I was like, well, here, I'll let you meet him. You know, I was very happy to, you know, and not to mention, I kind of thought I was hot shit dating somebody in college. And I was still in high school. You know, I was going and hanging out at the college every weekend, not really doing what these high school people were doing. You know, and that was fine. And my mom finding out was great. First thing she said was, don't tell your dad. My dad is, let's see, he's very Republican. we'll say it that he's very Republican, very narrow, like very narrow-minded, not very open to things. So of course my mom's like, don't tell your father. And I was like, I didn't plan on it. I didn't plan on telling you either, but you found out. So, but you know, so that was great. I was, you know, going through living my life. My mom did, she met these two guys that were in a couple at like some church or whatever, and she wanted me to kind of like meet with them and be friends with them and stuff. And we talked and stuff. So she did what she could to help me have like good role models, so to speak. Which was good. That was fine. So we'll fast forward to the end of my junior year. My dad, my dad found out I was gay, not in exactly the way I would like him to have. He found me in bed with my boyfriend. But we were really only sleeping. We didn't have any sex, I promise you. We were only sleeping. We had our clothes on. It was all great. But it was probably one of the most terrifying things in my life. I was like, I woke up and he opened the door. My dad's never opened the door on me in my entire life. Like at his house, he's always knocked. For some reason, my dad opened the door to tell me breakfast was ready. And he actually also had family in town at his house that I had never met before. And they were there, and so he came in to wake me up to tell me there was breakfast. He knew my boyfriend was, well, he thought he was a friend. He knew my friend was going to be staying there too. So he opened the door and saw it and slammed the door, and I was like, you need to get ready to go. So I walked out there, and all my dad said was, get out of my house. And I said, all right. And so got my stuff, and I left. And before I had gotten home, my dad had called my mom and told my mom what happened. You know, my mom's like, well, I told you not to tell him. And I was like, well, I didn't tell him. You know, but I was like, whatever, you know. Okay, so my dad found out. You know, what's going to happen now? So my dad went through some issues. And so I went to the same high school my dad went to. And it was a Catholic school. So there was a priest that my dad had for a teacher that I knew very well as well. So he's like, let's go talk to Monsignor Higgins. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'll do what you want me to do. You know, I'll do this for you. So we went to go talk to him, and I walked out of the room, and then I went back in, and he's like, you know, your dad loves you very much. I think it would be good, and I recommended this to your dad, that you go see a therapist together. And the therapist, he's a good guy, he's part of the church, and I was like, okay, let's do it. So my dad and I went to therapy. We went for probably about a month where we were doing together sessions, and it was fine. I don't really remember anything significant out of that with my dad and I going. Well, then he said he wanted to start meeting us separately. I was like, okay. So I would go and do my session. And in these sessions, this guy was telling me how horrible of a person I was, that I was going to hell, I'm a terrible person, I'm killing my family. I would leave the therapy sessions in tears, but I continued to go for a little bit longer. Because that's what my dad wanted to do, and this is what, you know, I was willing to do that. You know, but I would leave there crying. It was awful. I mean, he made me feel like the worst person in the entire world. And so finally one day I called my dad, and I was like, Dad, I'm not going back. And he's like, oh, that man's not telling you that. He's not that kind of person. He's part of the church, doing this, that, and the other. Yeah, no, it wasn't like that. You know, and my dad's like, well, if you're not going to go, don't talk to me. And I was like, all right, been down that road before. So there have been another few months where I wasn't talking to my dad, and you know, because of that. But I really tried. But I was going to be me, and at that point, I knew I was going to be me. Nothing was going to change that. I am what I am. My dad. I still think in the back of my dad's head, he still believes that this is a choice. He's very Republican. I mean, there's no other way to say it. So, and that was, you know, and somehow on my senior year of high school, my dad was back in my life. You know, I didn't really hang out with people from school. I was building my life in like the gay world of like the high school gay world, you know, around. There was like a little hangout we would go to and we'd had fun. So in the midst of that, I was just kind of living life day by day, not really having a plan. College wasn't even in my, you know, radar. You know, I was like, I'm just going to graduate high school and I'll be great. So I ended up graduating. I did graduate high school. You know, and I was 18 when I my senior year of high school. So let me backtrack a little bit. So I did start going out because my sister, who was my hero, when she turned 18, that's what she did. Her and her friends would go, like Tampa has an equivalent to 6th Street. They have the same thing down there. So she would go down there. Well, I was going to the gay clubs. You know, my sister took me to my first gay club. So I was going down there because I thought it was the cool thing to do. So I was doing that, and that's when I kind of started getting into, I guess, the party scene. And by party, I mean just going out drinking with your friends and having a good time. The drugs didn't come till later. So I did that. The year after, so I graduated in June, so like the next fall, I did go to I kind of went to college. I went to like a semester and kind of bullshitted my way through a couple of classes. But in the meantime, I also was kind of pushed out of my house because, you know, the whole moving around every month or every year type of thing, it was getting more frequent with my mom. And I didn't realize this, but my mom had some legal issues that she was dealing with. And I woke up one night and the cops came busting into the house looking for her. I mean, they didn't bust down the door, but, like, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night with the cop swinging open my door looking for my mom. And I never got an explanation as to why. So I had a friend, he was like, listen, he's like, why don't you just come move into my house and figure out what you're going to do? I was like, okay. So I moved into, so I moved out when I was 18 years old. Just kind of thrown into the world with, I think I was working at Banana Republic. Like, I had no money. Like, I didn't know. I think that's my job. Was my job. So, you know, I just kind of was figuring it out, and I had some friends. I was just going online. Like, had no idea what it was to, like, work full time, have benefit. I didn't know any of that. So I applied for a job working for a company, and they hired me working full time. So, you know, I was 18 years old, and I was making, you know, 30 grand a year. I thought I was hot shit because, so I was like, who needs college? So that's, excuse me, that's why college was just kind of put on the back burner, because I didn't care. I was making money. I didn't care. I was able to move out and get an apartment, you know, and I was still going out to clubs, making my friends, having fun, you know, never, you know, just drinking a lot. Even though I was under 21, I always found a way to get drunk. And I missed an entire part of when my drinking started, but so, yeah. So, what I left out before, and I don't want to do this, but so what I left out before was when I was about 13 or 14 years old, my stepmom, we would always have Sunday dinner with her parents, and they would give me a glass of wine. And then it turned into, well, if you're going to drink, we want you to drink at our house. So my parents would let me drink at their house. And, you know, if we would have family get togethers or something, I always drank to excess. It didn't matter what it was. I always drank to excess. And it was because I thought it was cool. It was the cool thing to do to be able to go back to school on Monday and be like, oh, I got so drunk this weekend. You know, because I went to a Catholic school. There was a lot of drinking going on. And so that's how the whole drinking thing started. And my dad didn't want me to do it behind his back, but of course I did. There was a lot of drinking behind his back. A lot of drinking and driving, too, and that wasn't smart. Luckily and thankfully, I never got caught. But yeah, so, okay, now here we are. So I was working, okay, back to the, so I was working full time, making decent money. I was living in an apartment, and, I had another friend who, I was going to end up moving in with her. We were going to get a house instead of an apartment. So I moved into this house with two other people. Well, then the full-time job I had decided they were going to close the site and they were going to lay everybody off. And I kind of had a panic attack because I was like, I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do about that. In the meantime of all of that, I kind of started going to this one club repeatedly. Like, I would go there every week because it was the cool club to go to in town. You know, I eventually became friends with the owner of the club. And she was like, let me get you a drink. And I was like, I showed her my wristband. And she just looked at the wristband, ripped it off me. And she's like, if you're in my club, I don't care. You can drink. So I was, I think, 19 years old at that point. So I was like, awesome. This is definitely going to be my club that I come to all the time because I can drink here. And most of the time, she was buying my drink. So I would go there and get wasted. And, you know, and I became better. I was becoming friends with her more and more and more. I ended up starting to work at that club just one night a week, just kind of helping her out and, you know, having fun, drinking and everything else. So I had known that the people that worked there, like her and like the bar manager and stuff, when I'd be in the office with them, they would be doing cocaine. And they're like, is that going to bother you? And I'm like, nah, go do what you got to do. You know, I didn't want to be like, oh, no, I can't be around that. Because I knew drugs were bad. So I would be in there with them just drinking my drink while they were doing their whatever they were doing. But I never touched it. And so, but this goes back to the whole thing of, what is it? You're in a barber shop. I don't know, that stupid cliche. There you go, that, yeah. So it goes back to that whole thing. If you're around it enough, you're eventually going to do it. And I did. One day I walked in there. I was wasted drunk, and they were doing it. And somebody that didn't know that I didn't do it was in there, and she offered me some. And I was like, yeah, let me do this. And I was like, oh my God, this stuff is wonderful. Why? I'm like, I can come here and get wasted drunk and do some of this and be able to drive home and I'll be all right. You know, why didn't, I'm like, why haven't you guys told me that? Why, you know, why haven't you told me this before? So of course I started doing that more. And then I started buying my own, and learning about that. And, but it was still, I was able to keep a job. I was able, you know, I still had my things. I was only doing it on that Saturday night to kind of, so I could go out and get drunk and then I could do my thing and be able to get home. Sunday, I'll stay in bed all day and go to work on Monday. So one day I was out at the bar and, I ended up going to, I was going back to one of the performers' house afterwards. We were going to go back and hang out at her house. And I had heard of meth before, but never really knew anything about it. Didn't know what it really did to you or anything like that. So we went back to her house, and we're standing there. We had just gotten home, and she goes to give me something, and I was like, what is this? Oh, because I did it, and it hurt really bad. Never felt that kind of pain before. So I was like, what is this? And she's like, oh, it's just a stronger form of coke. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, 3 days later, I'm still there, and I'm like, what the fuck did you give me? And somebody else that was there was like, you just did crystal meth. And I was like, oh, this is what that feels like. You know, and it was, I'm not going to lie, I loved it. that is the first time I did that. And so after that, I was like, I need to do this more often, because if I was doing coke, I didn't function the next day. This stuff, I could go and I can function and be out in public and do what I need to do. So, you know, it started out as I was just going to do it. I just did it every once in a while. And then I realized that for what I paid for a bag of coke and what I paid for meth, I could get more use out of the meth. You know, it would last me a lot longer than the coke. So I was like, I'm just going to do this meth. You know, and then I learned and saw some people like, how they, and this is how I, you know, rationalize it in my head. So I only snorted it. I didn't smoke it, because those people that smoked it are crazy, and I'm not going to do that. You know, and then one night I had an option of smoking it or not doing it at all. So, of course, I was like, all right, I'll learn how to smoke it. So then when I started smoking it, it was, okay, well, I don't shoot it, so I'm okay. You know, I'm not that bad of an addict. I don't shoot it. Those people over there are really bad addicts. You know, and then, of course, sure enough, I started doing that as well. And it was the thing of, when you're around it enough, you're going to end up doing it. And, you know, that's how this whole drug thing, that's how my whole addiction was. Like, if you're around it enough, you're going to end up doing it. But I didn't think I was an addict. I still had a place to live. I still had a job. I was still had money and was still able to do it myself. So that lasted, I mean, I started doing meth probably in, oh God, we'll say 2005. No, 2006. So I started doing that in 2006. So in that's enough. 2007, I don't know. So 2000, it's all a blur. So 2007, and I know this one for sure, you know, my parents had gone out of town, and they were in Tennessee. They did not know that I had a key to their house, and it was the end of my birthday weekend. I kind of partied hardy for that weekend. I had to go to work on Monday, so I just wanted to go somewhere and chill out for the night by myself that I knew nobody was going to be at. So that was my dad's house. And so what I didn't know was the neighborhood that they live in had a series of break-ins like the past month before that. So the neighborhood was on high alert for anybody that wasn't there, and they all knew my parents were out of town, so they saw my car and saw me in the house, and they called the cops and said there was a burglar in the house. So the cops showed up to my house, or to my dad's house, with me in there. I was pretty high. You know? you know, and I was just kind of chilling out. And the cops showed up, and they're like, nobody's supposed to be here. And I was like, this is my dad's house. And so I called my dad, and I was like, Dad, it's me at your house. Well, that didn't go over well. So apparently the scenario with my stepmom, and I could just hear my stepmom screaming in the background. She's never screamed at me before in her life. She's always been like a second mother to me. My stepsister said it was like The Exorcist when the head's spinning. That's what she thought was going on. Because it was like midnight, you know. They called him in Tennessee and woke him up. And, yeah, my dad's like, you need to get out of the house. And I was like, all right. And the cop's like, well, can we walk around? And the cop was talking to my dad. And he goes, well, can we walk around inside the house to make sure nobody else is here? My dad, being the homeowner, said yes. So I didn't have a choice but to let them in. That's when they came in and they found my drugs. And, of course, I was like, those aren't mine. I didn't, you know, blah, 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 blah. Of course, I'm like, this is my first time. It's my birthday. Well, I don't know, some bullshit. And so they let me leave somehow. And I was like, all right. And I just kind of went and got more drugs and continued to do them before I had to go to work the next day. So that happened in June. In September, I was getting ready to move into an apartment. I was at my dad's house, walking out the door with the check in hand for the rent. And the cops were at the door to arrest me for a warrant for possession of methamphetamines. And I hadn't told my dad and stepmom any of that went on. So, yeah, that was a big surprise to me because I was like, uh-oh. My dad was like, what the hell? And so I got arrested in front of my parents in their neighborhood. And, yeah, that didn't go over well. So they were... And my parents were leaving the next day to go out of town, like on vacation. So I called my dad when I got to jail, and he's like, well, I'm not bailing you out. I'm going on vacation tomorrow. Bye. And I was scared. I was terrified. I'd never been to jail, never been in any kind of trouble other than getting a parking ticket. So I got out in a couple of days, like on a bond, on a PR bond or whatever they call it, and was told, okay, you're going to be put in drug court. You need to go for this evaluation. So I went for the evaluation. In the meantime, I never stopped using. I mean, I did when I was like staying with my grandparents, but then I got back into my own apartment, and of course, I started using again because that's what I knew how to do. It was fun. At that point, it was fun. They were telling me that. Oh shit. I'll speed up. So, like, and of course, friends of mine are like, oh, we know how to do this. You're going to go in for this evaluation. Just tell them it was your first time. You don't do it very often. They'll give you IOP. You do that. Okay, yeah, that's what I'll do. So I did that. And of course, they said, okay, you're going to do outpatient. Awesome. Went to outpatient once, and I tested dirty for meth again. So I went back to court, and she's like, all right, you need to go to another evaluation. So I went to another evaluation. They said IOP because I lied again. And I went to IOP again and tested dirty again. On the third time, I went in there and the judge is like, you're going to jail because you're not... She's like, I don't believe you're doing any of that. She's like, I don't believe that you need IOP. She's like, I don't care what this evaluation says. So I went to jail and I knew I wasn't getting out right away. So I went to jail for another... I think I was in there for like a month before my court date. And when I got there, she said, you're going to inpatient treatment. So it was a court-ordered inpatient treatment. So it was a six-month program, very similar to the Salvation Army, if anybody's familiar with that. Court-ordered. So the way my treatment was is you go in there, for 3 months you're in-house, and for 3 months you are out getting a job. So it wasn't really treatment, and the people that were there, especially because it was court-ordered, and I really didn't want treatment either. I just didn't want to go be in jail. So I chose to do that. I got out. At the time, before I went in there, I was also dating somebody. So when I went to jail, I was still with this person throughout the time I was in treatment, in jail. He stuck with me. So when we got out, or when I got out, we got an apartment together. And I still had a job. So it was all right. I was being a productive member of society, or what I thought. Although I wasn't doing drugs, I was drinking a lot. I drank a lot when I got out of treatment that time. My boyfriend at the time worked at a bar, so I was at a bar with him every night. But he would drink, I would drink, and that always led to abuse on his behalf. He was very abusive towards me. I was in this relationship for 2 years, and it was a very abusive relationship. The only way that relationship ended is because he called the cops on me one night because I wouldn't let him in the house, and they came in, saw me drunk, and they took me to jail because a part of my probation was I wasn't allowed to drink. So I was in jail for 2 weeks then, got out there. But they knew the situation with my boyfriend, and I had some people backing me up there. So they let me out with some other class that I was supposed to take. And, you know, I never went back with him. And so I was continuing to work. I think I lasted about 2 or 3 weeks out of that relationship before I started doing drugs again. Of course, it started out with coke, and then I went and found meth later on that night because coke wasn't doing it for me. That's when things went spiraling downhill. I burned every bridge that I possibly ever had. People that cared about me, but I was just, you know, I was messing around. I was, you know, making good money, but I was, you know, smoking it or shooting it all up. So they were like, we're done. We don't want you around us anymore. You know, I lost my job. I was staying on someone's couch and just doing a lot of drugs. My probation officer was going to violate me, which meant I was probably going to be going to prison. So I was like, I can't do that. So my aunt in Dallas called me and was like, hey, we're going to, why don't you come here and start over? So, of course, and I was lying to her, telling her, yeah, I just want to get clean, blah, 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 blah. So she bought me a plane ticket and flew me out to Dallas. And me going out to Dallas or coming here to Texas, I just thought, my Florida issues, they'll forget about them. Well, they don't forget about them, let me just tell you. If you're on felony probation in another state, they don't forget. Yeah. So, anyways, so I came out here. That was the geographical change that I did. Came out here thinking, hey, I'm going to start new. I had every resource out there. I was living in my family's house. They were willing to take me in and take care of me, get me whatever I needed. They were as supportive as they could be. Unfortunately, drugs were definitely what I wanted. So less than 24 hours off the plane, I was already doing drugs. And I was doing things like meeting people online and disappearing for a couple of days in Dallas where I don't even know where the hell I'm at. You know, the third day I was there, I went and met somebody and didn't come back for 4 days and never called or anything because I didn't know where the hell I was at. You know, and I continued to do that. And finally, after 4 months, they were like, we don't want you here anymore. I was like, okay, so I'm in Dallas. I don't know where the hell I'm at. I had a friend that lived here in Austin. He said, hey, why don't you come down here and stay with me? Awesome. So why not? Let me move to another city where I know less people, where I know one person in this entire town. You know, and I got a job. I started working. But I was still continuing to do drugs. And then they were like, we don't want you living with us anymore. And I was like, okay, well, let me go get a hotel. I'll stay in this hotel, figure something out. That short time that I had planned to stay in a hotel ended up being 2 years of living in hotels. Because I had nowhere else to go. I didn't know anybody here that would let me move in with them. So I lived in a hotel for two years because I was a server. So I'd go make money that night, go pay for the hotel, and have a little bit left over for drugs. You know, if I ate at work. And that was how it was for the first 2 years I was in Austin. After that, I lost my job. I was living in people's houses. You know, I would just go over there to hang out and not leave for 4 months. you know, I did that to quite a few people, you know. I mean, that's how it happened. And then eventually I ended up on the streets. And I was homeless on the streets of Austin for probably about 2 years, like physically on the streets. And that was just, after 2 years, I was like, how can this be me? Like, I wasn't raised to be homeless. And that period of time, like probably about a month after I moved to Austin, I stopped talking to my dad because he told me to call him when I got my shit together, and I never got my shit together. So I just didn't call my dad. In that period of time as well, both of my grandmothers passed away. And I got to talk to one, but she couldn't talk back to me when I talked to her. You know, and I just continued to use even more because I didn't want to feel whatever that was. I was, you know, the sadness of losing my grandmothers. And then, so being homeless on the streets of Austin, one day I was walking with some other homeless person that I had found. We were walking in downtown. We were walking by, PES, and, he said, hey, if you ever want to just get off the street and get a place to sleep, just go in there and tell them you're going to kill yourself and they'll give you a place to sleep. That's what it was described to me. I now know that it's psychiatric emergency services, but I didn't know what it was. And so I was like, all right, that's good to know. So I kind of put that in the back of my brain. I walked by that building probably 7 or 8 more times. And then finally one day I was like, I'm really fucking sick of being on the streets. I'm tired of this bullshit. So I walked in there and told him exactly that. And the guy looks at me and goes, no, I really don't think you are. And I was like, no, I'm not. He goes, but do you want to get help? And I'm like, will that get me a place to stay? You know, I mean, I was going to do whatever I had to do to get off the streets. I didn't care what it was. So he's like, all right, we're going to help you. So we're going to send you here. So PES sent me to the 15th Street Respite. And they were like, well, let's talk about treatment. And I was like, oh, I didn't know about treatment. I had no intentions of trying to get sober. I just needed a timeout so I could, figure out a place to live and get a job but no intentions of getting sober, being in recovery. I just didn't want to be on the streets. So I had a friend that when we were using one time was like, yeah, you know, we were sitting there smoking and shit. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to Austin Recovery tomorrow. And I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, and of course, like, when you're like this, you're down in your luck and all that, oh, no, but everybody hates me, I have no friends, these people are saying, you know, you're posting that shit on Facebook to make people feel sorry for you. I did that a lot, and then finally this person messaged me and said, hey, you don't need to do that anymore, you can go to Austin Recovery, and here's the phone number. So when I went into the respite, I was like, what about Austin Recovery? She's like, all right, let's call Austin Recovery. So I called here, and I got a bed date. And she's like, you know what, I think it was like for three or four weeks after that, she goes, you can stay here until your bed opens up at Austin Recovery. Awesome. So the weekend before I was supposed to leave for Austin Recovery, I went out on a pass because I had to go see a friend to say bye or whatever, and ended up using and not going back. And that was a Friday. I was supposed to come into Austin Recovery that Monday. And I was, of course, sketched out and didn't want to come into Austin Recovery that Monday. So that was a Friday. By that Tuesday, I was like, I'm fucking sick of this. I'm done. So I went to Breckenridge because PS was closed by that time. I went to Breckenridge and was there. They put me back into the 15th Street Respite. And I called Austin Recovery and got another start date. They gave me so they told me it was going to be 2 months before I would be able to get in here, and I was like, that's fine, I'll wait. I ended up getting in here in a week and a half. So I got here the week before Thanksgiving in 2016. You know, and even coming in here, I didn't think I was going to stay sober. Didn't want to stay sober. I just needed a timeout. A couple weeks in, you know, seeing the alumni come out, seeing the people come out, and seeing what their lives were like. They were so happy. They were fun. They were joking around. They were having a good time. I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll give this a try. Let me try this whole recovery thing. So I left here and I went to Sober Living. I was out here for 45 days. When I left here, I went to Sober Living. I went to Eudaimonia. And my experience at Eudaimonia was really, really great. I was there for a year and a half. In the year and a half that I was there, you know, they told me I had to go to meetings. And my experience with AA back home was not good. It was very cult-like, very, very aggressive. It wasn't what I wanted. I wanted to do things at my pace. So they were like, you have to go to 4 meetings a week. And I was like, yeah, I'll go. I'll just tell you I go. But I had nothing else to do. I didn't have a job. I didn't have anything. So one day after this little thing we had to do there, somebody that lived there was like, hey, let's go to this meeting at Club 101. I was like, all right, why not? I have nothing else to do. Because the only thing I had going on at that time was IOP, and I don't even think I started IOP at that time. So I went to the noon meeting at Club 101 called Keep It Simple. It's an amazing meeting. I liked it so much. I continued to go back there for every day until I got a job, which was like 3 or 4 months after I got there. You know, and after going to that meeting, I'd be like, well, here, let me go to another meeting. Let me try other meetings out. And so I started going to different meetings around town and started to really like them, started to you know, get involved with them. In the process of all of that, I never disconnected from the alumni here. I've been out here almost every Sunday since I've been out. I've missed a few Sundays if I've been out of town. But for the most part, I'm always out here on Sundays. Very active in the alumni here. It's played a major part in me staying sober. So yeah, living in Sober Living, it has its challenges. I am grateful and thankful enough, or thankful that I never went through those struggles because I knew if I went out and used, I'd be back on the streets again, and I didn't want to be on the streets. I didn't care what happened or anything like that. I don't have people here. I don't have family here that would say, okay, here, let me help you out. Let me do this. And I didn't think treatment would be an option for me again. So I was like, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. And so I continued, you know, I got a job, started working, started paying rent. That was a huge deal for me to pay rent because I hadn't paid rent in 10 years. you know, I was just going to visit people and not leaving. You know, you don't have to pay rent then. So, yeah. So, you know, I got a job and I ended up, you know, while I was here, I got in contact with my family again, with my dad. And stepmom, and so I, you know, was building that relationship back up with them, and yeah, so they, so also being in that first year of recovery, I can remember I was here and I was going to get out, but there was going to be like 2 weeks before this one sober living that I was going to go into was opening up, so I was like, hey, Dad, why don't I come see you guys for Christmas? And my counselor was like, I don't think that's a good idea. I was like, yeah, but I don't have anywhere else to go. You know, I did want to go see my family, but she's like, you're 30 days clean. I really don't think it's a good idea you go see your family that you haven't spoken to in 5 years. And I was like, but I think it's a great idea. So she told my dad it wasn't a good idea. So my dad's like, okay, no, you're not going to do it. He's like, so why don't you come for the 4th of July? So I remember him telling me, why don't you come for the 4th of July? And I was like, oh, shit, that means I got to stay sober for 6 months before I go see you? I'm like, like, that put a lot of pressure on me. Like, holy shit, I don't know if I can stay sober for 3 months, let alone six. You know, and then 4 months passed, and my dad calls me and said, hey, I'm buying your plane ticket. And I was like, oh, shit, now I really got to stay sober. Because my dad just spent $400 on a plane ticket for me. My dad's cheap, so I would never hear the end of it. Sorry. You know, and it went by, and I went and saw my family, and it was really, really great being able to spend a week with my family that I hadn't seen, that hadn't heard from me, didn't know what was going on, you know. And, you know, I thought it was going to be awkward with my dad, because my dad will ask questions that he doesn't want to know the answers to, so when you give him a truthful answer, he'll get mad at you. So I told him before I left, I was like, Dad, if you ask me a question, I'm going to answer it truthfully. I'm like, but I think about the question before you ask me. You know, so, and, you know, and my dad knew, he knew the whole gist of it, and he was, my dad was awesome. He didn't say anything about my lifestyle. He didn't say anything. All he said was he was proud of the way I was living my life. That's all he cared about. He just wanted me to, you know, be doing better. You know, I lived in sober living for a year and a half. I moved out last March. I am very active and, in the groups that I go to, I have two home groups. One home group meets at Galano Club. It's an NA home group. And, you know, I'm GSR of that group. I've been going to that group for almost 2 years now. I also go to a Crystal Meth Anonymous meeting at Club 101, and I'm the treasurer of that group and been the treasurer for over a year. You know, and it's great. It's great to be able to go back to a meeting every week and see people, and you get to know them. And when something's wrong, they can tell you, hey, what's wrong? If you're doing something messed up, they can call you on your bullshit. You know, and not living in sober living, I didn't have, you know, I was living with somebody from the rooms, but it wasn't somebody, like, I rarely saw him. You know, staying connected to the people here at this place. This place is amazing. I have so much respect and love for this place. I absolutely love coming out here. And every time, you know, it's great because people are like, oh, so what are you doing on Sunday? I'm like, can't do anything. I'm going out to Austin Recovery. You know, so 2 years after, now that I'm 2 years clean, I just moved into my first apartment by myself. Yeah. So wasn't really planned, but it just happened that way. And I'm happy it happened that way. I was glad. You know, at the end of December, my roommate that I lived with, he worked at the apartment complex that we lived in. He ended up getting fired. So he's like, yeah, we got to be out of the apartment by like this weekend. You know, when I was using, I would have just gone out and used and said, fuck that. I'm not going to worry about what's going on. I'll deal with it when the time comes. And then when the time came, you know, the door's locked and I can't get my stuff. You know, But being in recovery and being sober, I was able to work through that. I have a wonderful, amazing friend who was like, hey, you can come stay with me. And, you know, and I felt great. It was stressful, but it wasn't like my whole world was torn apart. It was just, okay, this is happening. You need to deal with it. And it worked. And, you know, it also felt great to be able to have a friend that trusted me enough to, you know, stay in their house and not care, give me a key to their house and not be like all freaked out and like, you need to leave when I leave in the morning. You can't be here when I'm not here. Cause that sucks. That really sucks when people are like that with you. And so it just felt really great. And, you know, of course I was like, oh, anytime I stay with somebody that I know, it turns out really bad. And, you know, I have all those fears of like when I was using, you know, people not trusting you, people lying about you, something happening to them and blaming you because they're all sketchy and, you know, stuff like that. You know, and it didn't happen that way. And, you know, then an opportunity came up to where, I could find a place on my own. And I was like, okay, so I'm really scared about this because last time I lived on my own, it didn't end well at all. And so I'm like, all right, you know what? Let's try this. So moved into an apartment, you know, and I feel good so far. I mean, it's only been, 2 weeks? I've been in my own apartment for 2 weeks, and it's great. I'm hardly ever at my apartment anyways. If I'm not, I'm usually out doing something recovery related. So I'm hardly ever there. And if not, Galano Club's literally across the street. I can just go to Galano and hang out. So, I can honestly say my life is great. I haven't been able to say that, ever that I can remember of my life being great. I never thought that sobriety would be so much fun. I went to lunch today with a bunch of people for someone's birthday and we laughed the entire 3 hours that we were there. It was the funnest time I've ever had. Well, not I've ever had, but funnest time I've had. People in recovery are crazy as hell, and the stories that they have are so much fun. And it's great to sit there and laugh with people and have those friendships that mean the world to you that are family. Because you know what? I do have a family that I love dearly that live in Florida and Tennessee, but the people here are my real family, and they're going to be here with me. If something goes wrong, they're going to be the ones I call first, not my family back home. Because they won't understand. The people here will understand what I'm going through and everything else. So, that's all I got.